Good day, everybody, and welcome to another fact and fun-filled episode of the Michael and Patty podcast. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
Welcome to PEI. It's another beautiful day here on the island, unless you're looking through the front window of this truck and it's miserable and 10 degrees and windy.
Yes, it's a perfect day to take pictures of a flag with the flags being fully extended out.
Absolutely. So today's subject is going to be something that probably values most people that are first-time home buyers, people moving into the country, and even those people that have bought and sold many houses, because there may be some details about mortgage financing, current interest rates, the situation, what's going on with the Canadian banking system that will prove to be helpful. This episode not only covers Prince Edward Island real estate, but would pretty well cover the entire country as mortgages are federalized. Patty, where do we start?
Where do we start? Well, if we start with buyers and they're on realtor.ca or looking on third-party websites and they decide, today's the day I want to buy a house. I think we're ready. What's the first thing you would recommend that they do?
They want to go to a bank and get pre-approved, knowing that pre-approval doesn't mean you're really pre-approved. It just means they've looked at your financial data, which we'll get into momentarily, and they said overall things look pretty good. Now, after they select a house, what's going to happen at some point, we're jumping ahead about 12 steps here, is since the bank is really buying the house and you're not, since they're going to hold most of that money most of the time, they're going to have that house appraised. So just because you think that $200,000 house is worth $850,000 doesn't mean it's going to pass appraisal. And the other thing that can happen is your situation can change. What we're going to talk about is how to get a mortgage in Canada, but we're also going to warn you that when you're going through this approval process, even after you have an offer accepted on a house, you'll notice that the bank's documentation basically holds them to absolutely nothing, and your approval can be pulled right up until the closing date of that house. And there's nothing more disappointing than trying to move into your new home after you've left your apartment or your current dwelling to find out that your financing has been kiboshed because you've purchased a couple vehicles, you've got tons of credit card debt, all of a sudden you went out and bought $80,000 worth of furniture for your new house. So don't change your current financial picture, at the very least, until you move in your home.
Absolutely. So when I receive a phone call from a buyer saying, I would like to view this home, the first thing I do is I do ask them, have they been pre-approved or pre-qualified to make this purchase? Now, like you said, Michael, there are a pre-approval you can do online and just have you're just inputting your income to get an approximate amount of what mortgage payment amount is what they're calculating you can handle. Therefore, what does that translate to being a property value? So they may come to me and say, I've been pre-approved for $300,000 because I inputted my information into this third-party platform. However, that doesn't mean they've actually physically gone in, shared with the lender their debt ratio as well as their income so that the lender can make a more informed decision on an opinion as to what they could actually afford. So we really try to enforce and insist that our clients, the ones that I work with, and I know my team, have this step done. It is the most important, the first step that any buyer should do before they step foot into any house. Do you agree?
I agree, but I think you have to take it a few steps further. So starting off at the beginning, the banks are all going to ask you to fill out the same information, provide the same information initially. And that's going to be, what's your income? What's your monthly expenses? They're going to run your credit score to see where you are between 0 and 900, which is the top. Highest credit score I've ever seen has probably been 874. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that's approximately where I can see them.
That's the highest score. That is like gold, as some people would say. So the credit score is important because the credit score will also get into what credit do you have available to you? How many lines of credit? How many credit cards? What are they currently at? What's your repayment schedule like? Do you pay on time? That's all brought into your credit report. But the bank's also interested in servicing the debt. They want to make sure that if you have a mortgage payment of $1,000, you can afford to pay that based on your stated income. They're also going to look at how long have you been employed? Has it been 1 year, 2 years, 20 years? Someone that has had 9 jobs in the past 6 months, probably not a good candidate because it shows you might be a little unstable. Someone that's worked for the federal government for the last 25 years that has a pension hanging over their head and going to work there for another 10 or 15, they would be on the top of the list because their financials are very easy to look at. So they're going to look at all this information. And then when you get further into the process, they're going to ask you for documentation pertaining to this information. Now, if your financial picture is simple, you're just an employee, you've got one source of income, these are my expenses, a car payment, a lease payment on whatever, a small line of credit, that's a pretty simple picture. Someone that's operating under 5 different corporation names and an individual, and they've got all kinds of stuff, and they're married, and they've got kids, and rental properties, and all kinds of other income streams from equities, that gets really complicated. The banks really don't like to deal with that, and sometimes it's just best just to refer them to your accountant. Typically, what Patty and I do is we like to put together a financial package which has a bank application filled out. They're all the same. They all contain basically the same information. I like to get a copy of my credit report online. You can get a copy of your credit report online for free through multiple sources. Do not feel you have to pay for it. There are services you can pay for that will keep an eye on it, tell you if it changes. But those services, there's free ones as well, and then there's paid ones. So request your credit report before you go in. You can run the number, your Beacon score, to see where you fit in acceptability, I guess you'd call it, or desirability. Typically 600, so would be pretty average. When you get into 7s, that's good. 8s is spectacular. You're probably not going to be 900 because that's perfect. Beacon scores for the U.S. and Canada are very similar, but the mortgage systems work different, particularly in the terms of amortization, where the Americans actually have 30-year amortization, which has actually recently been brought to Canada, from what I understand. So you make your application. I would submit it to 2 banks, probably, in my opinion, BMO and RBC. I would submit it to 2 mortgage brokers, and I would submit it to 2 credit unions. Credit unions, the advantage of them historically has been is they have their own cash pool, which means when you deal with credit union A or credit union B, they have their own bucket of money they're diving into, and they do have goals as to how many mortgages they want to issue that year or that month based on that bucket, especially if they have surplus cash. Recently, the credit unions have been amalgamating, just like everything else. I mean, I'm sure the Canadian banks, if they could all amalgamate into one bank, they would probably do it. And that's happening with the credit unions. Basically, I follow the course of the least resistance. You're going to find that certain lenders are going to want a lot more information, a lot more from you. If your Beacon score goes down, it's almost a guarantee that they're going to want a higher interest rate, or they're going to want a larger deposit. For purposes of this podcast, we're not going to get into commercial financing, just residential. Anything we should add?
No, and that's it exactly. A lender will be more cautious if there's a higher risk. And typically, a lot of my clients that are first-time home buyers, they typically seem to average fall in the high, around the high sixes, 680, 690. So if you don't know what your credit score is, there's a great app called Credit Karma. There are others, so we're not getting anything from Credit Karma for pushing their app here, but it really does allow you an opportunity to check in, whether it's once a month or so, just to see what your credit score is. You'll feel far more confident. Plus, also, it lets you know what is on your credit report, what things are appearing, where have you made late payments. You should know this. You should not be at a disadvantage sitting across the table from a mortgage specialist, a lender, and not know these numbers for yourself. So we strongly advise that you pull this information. If you need to do any credit housekeeping, it gives you an opportunity to do this before you're sitting across the table from a lender trying to sell yourself to them to give you the funds to make your purchase.
Right, because down the road, they're going to ask for your income tax, I guess you call
it. Notice of assessment.
Your notice of assessment, which is basically a receipt or a statement as to what you submitted for those previous years. They're going to ask for bank statements, whatever. But if you go in there acting like you're knowledgeable or knowing that you're knowledgeable about Canadian mortgages, you'll probably get a better deal on the rate as well. The rates can be checked. There's services like ratehub.ca. There's a bunch of different websites in Canada. Make sure you're not looking at US. That will show you what the current rates are. And there's all kinds of resources online. The three top resources I would probably look at is the Canadian government actually has a really good section on Canadian mortgages at canada.ca, money and finances, debt and borrowing, mortgages, if you can follow that menu system, or just Google it. But they've got all kinds of great information on getting a mortgage in Canada that's not skewed, biased, or in the case of the banks, they've got great information, but ultimately their goal is to sell you on their bank and collect you as a lead so they can submit you to a mortgage broker that can hopefully close you and sell you on a mortgage. I'd be very careful buying into sales on mortgages where they'll tell you, oh yeah, we'll give you a 1% mortgage rate, but they don't mention that's only for the first 6 days. What else? You're grabbing my sheets here. Go ahead.
I was just taking a look just to see, because this is some great information and resource material. The Government of Canada does have a great platform and site.
And a fabulously huge, ginormous font. I could read that probably from 30 feet.
Yes, you probably could. I'm sure this is just the settings on your computer.
No, it's not. My settings are normal.
So these are some of the things. And before you start shopping, why do we suggest that you speak to a lender before you get into anything with regards to falling in love with a home? Is for that reason right there. If you look at a home that is $325,000, the online platform said that this is what you could potentially purchase, and then you find out your pre-approval is $250,000, guess what? You, as well as whoever your sales representative is, has just sabotaged your whole buying experience. Because no home now at the $250,000 is going to compare to that $325,000 that you were looking at. And we have seen this in the past where a buyer will just decide it's not the right time for them because nothing seems to appeal to them or of interest to them. And it's only because they sabotaged their whole home ownership experience by going into a home that they couldn't afford.
Exactly. And when I mentioned three sites, we covered Government of Canada, which is a conversation in itself. And Patty's just looking at some of the pages I've printed out to give you some more information from that. The other site would be Canadian Home Mortgage Corporation, CMHC. You can check that out. There's tons of information and stats on there. And then with information as far as what the average sale price is and what the stats are on sales and what's the market like, that would be the Canadian Real Estate Association, CREA, CREA.ca, presumably. So I would check that out as well. If you run into a situation where you're just flat out rejected, there are things you can do. One of those things is bring in somebody that is strong financially as a co-signer, or a partner, sometimes your parents. Now, I know there's always a reluctance. I don't want to get my parents involved. I want to do this on my own. Well, if that's the case, you've been rejected. Would you say that's a good idea to bring in a third party?
Yeah. If it means getting a person into home ownership, they'll start to build some equity. If you have a clear contract, that is my recommendation and suggestion. Do not do it all as a warm, fuzzy feel good. anything that I do, and my children can attest to this, we do it in a contractual agreement. I prepare it, I get them to sign it, it preserves and the relationship so that there's no miscommunication. Well, you said this, this was our understanding. I value my family relationships. And any time that I entered into any kind of money situation relationship with a family member that I did not have a contractual agreement, yes, it can go sideways. So the way to preserve that, just do a contractual agreement. I completely think having a co-signer as a family member could work if it's done properly.
And if it doesn't work, there are other avenues. There are private lenders out there. Some of these private lenders deal with everybody and their brother. And when I was younger in my 20s, I was an entrepreneur. I dealt with mortgage lenders that dealt only with entrepreneurs and business people. So maybe there's a mortgage broker that, or mortgage lender that specializes in your genre or forte or whatever, but you are going to pay bigger rates. They could range, geez, today, I don't know what they are, 9, 10, 12, 25%. The idea being is they probably want you out of private lending as quickly as possible. They don't want the money in there for 25 years. They want you to use it, pay it back, and then they go on to their next client. So that is another avenue. My recommendation has always been be thrifty when you're buying a house, particularly if it's your first house. Like Patty said, obviously a $250,000 house is going to be a lot nicer than a $50,000 house, and a $700,000 house can be nicer than both of them. So if you are looking, our advice is stay within a price range. Do not try to compare 75 to 125 or 850. Compare apples to apples and apples, not apples to oranges. In most cases, houses that are priced properly at market value that are more expensive are going to be a lot nicer. The other thing to consider, and a lot of people are getting caught up in this today, they're borrowing money at less than 2%. And now they're renewing their mortgage and their rate's going to be 7 or 8%. All of a sudden, your gross debt and total debt ratio, you can Google that, is whacked. And now you're no longer fitting within the confines of what the mortgage lender wants to see. So your mortgage rates could even get more astronomical because now you're considered more of a higher risk.
Yeah, and that's part of, they don't want to see your debt ratio being more than 44%.
Depending on the lender.
Of your income. That, as a rule of thumb, is if you're looking to, how do I do some housekeeping to prepare myself for home ownership? The other thing is to increase your credit score. They don't like to see, is it 50%, Michael, would you say? Your debt, your credit card balance. So if you have a $1,000 credit card balance.
Well, that ties into your credit score. That's
exactly.
Right. That doesn't necessarily tie into the bank, but it ties into your credit score, which is a completely different subject. How the credit scores are designed is kind of cryptic. They give you a basic idea, you know, have credit happening, pay your bills on time, keep your credit cards and lines of credit less than 50% of the total, but no one really knows the exact formula, sort of like the Google search or YouTube algorithm. So I think that's what you're referring to.
Yes, I'm just giving some percentages so that they can do some of their own due diligence and some research themselves to determine where am I at in the process. The other thing is lenders, when they do set you up, they do a stress test and make sure based on today's, and this is what I was going to continue with what Michael had said, if you locked in at an interest rate to, you know, 4 years ago at 2%, and today the interest rates are 6%, give or take, then you're going to find yourself maybe not being able to afford the payments any longer. So what lenders do, you'll input your information online, you'll put in what the current interest rate is, you'll have it really, really tight to the numbers today. A lender is going to add at least 2% onto that, giving you some leeway. And to do a stress test, could you afford the mortgage in 3 years or 5 years, whatever your term is, if the interest rates went up by 2%? That's typically a rule of thumb that lenders, again, we're not finance experts here, so all of this information, you'll have to speak with your lender with regards to lenders, absolutely, But these are some of the things, if you don't know what to look for and where to start in the process, hopefully there's been some great information here today.
And where's the worst place to go for a mortgage where people turn usually as the first place?
Their own bank.
That's right. And why is that?
Your bank already has your business, so they're less inclined to jump through hoops to try to get more of your business because they're going to assume you're just going to automatically choose them.
So if you go to other banks, you're going to find that not only do they look at you as a potential client for a mortgage, but they're also thinking they probably have RSPs, the TFSA, GICs, bank accounts, commercial, personal accounts. They've got all kinds of business they can pick up, plus their family as well and their siblings. So there's a big gain for them to do well with a mortgage, whereas your bank already has your business. Now, most of the time, they're going to do their best to put that together, but the other banks are looking at you as a giant bonus because they don't have any of your business. Now, looking at a mortgage, not to make this podcast too long, you're essentially looking at a term of a mortgage, which is how long you're borrowing that money. That's how long that lender has agreed to work with you with that loan. And then you have the amortization, which in Canada was typically 25 years. Now it's extending to 30 like the U.S. And what you're seeing now is because people have champagne taste and beer pocketbooks. Is that the saying an old friend of mine used to say? In other words, they want to buy a house that's a lot more expensive than they can afford. So what you're seeing, particularly in the bigger cities, is you're seeing interest-only payments. So they're borrowing a sum of money, but they're never paying the principal down, which means you're never, ever going to be debt-free. Have you seen that?
Yes. No, I know exactly what you're referring to.
Then we have open and closed mortgages. Most mortgages are closed. You're borrowing the money. Here's the rate. End of story. An open mortgage would be something that you can pay down at any time. Now, if you're entrepreneurial or maybe you're commissioned sales, you might be able to pay your mortgage down quicker. You can do that with a completely open mortgage. You can pay it all off in 3 days if the agreement allows for that. Any other mortgage that's closed, they will allow you to do balloon payments, but they're typically a lot smaller. I can't remember the 25% of term or whatever it might be, depending on the bank, but they'll let you pay down some of that mortgage, but not all of it. If you decide to switch lenders midstream, you'll probably end up paying penalties. So once you're locked in, you're locked in. These penalties can be small, they can be huge. It depends who you're borrowing from. These are all things to consider when you're entering into an agreement with the lender. And as far as predicting interest rates, I wouldn't go as far as thinking anyone can really predict where the market is going to go as far as interest rates are concerned, but typically they don't vary that much up until recently.
Yes. Yeah, no, recently they've been, well, everyone's waiting for the big announcements to see what's going to happen this summer in Canada with their interest rates. So hopefully government, Bank of Canada, jumpstart our real estate market. But that's a whole other topic.
Anything else we need to cover here looking through the guidance from the government of Canada?
No, I believe we've covered most of the content on here. It does talk about TDS and GDS ratios, but that's a whole other podcast and information. If you want to know what those are, you can always Google them. It's just your total debt service ratio. So I think that about covers
it. Basically means how much money you're spending in relativity to how much you're making.
Well,
so if you're making $10,000 a month and you spend $11,000, your financial picture's not too good.
Yes, TDS ratio, though, includes when they're calculating for mortgages, as on topic with this podcast, is your total principal and interest payment for your mortgage, your heat cost, your property taxes.
And condo fees.
Condo fees. Half of the condo fees are factored into that. So
insurance would be another expense.
Insurance isn't factored, though, for your TDS as it pertains to lending.
It isn't, but it should be factored in the overall picture, especially if you're in an area where insurance is crazy, like a coastal floodplain or something. Really don't have those issues in Canada as much as they do in the States, like in places like Florida. But insurance should be taken in. All of these things should be taken in for your own personal needs. The bank's going to take in some of them as far as the application. So I think we're done with this subject.
Hopefully you've got some little tidbits and some good information.
I know I've learned an awful lot.
Sounds good.
And be sure to subscribe to the podcast or else we're never going to make another one. One of those podcasts you go back 10 years later, the last episode was in 2024 because the podcast people gave up.
No, I don't think we're going to give up. We enjoy talking about real estate, so.
And PEI in general. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.